From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made just a couple of hours ago at Parcel 5 in the city of Rochester. Mayor Lovely Warren announced the city's decision on how to fill one of the most prime pieces of real estate in the downtown area. Her choice is for a new performing arts center owned by the Rochester Broadway Theater League. Now, we're going to dig into that proposal and what it means next week on this program. Today happens to be the first in a series of interviews with candidates for Rochester City Council. There are a dozen candidates for the at-large council spots, and we're going to bring in them in groups of three. We thought about 12 at once, didn't really work out. So why not divide them into groups of three over the next month or so? You'll have the chance to hear the candidates describe their vision for Rochester, why they're running, how they would seek to improve our city. They'll answer our questions and yours. So let me go ahead and introduce them now. Willie Joe Lightfoot is a firefighter, a former county legislator, among other things. Nice to have you here. Thanks for being here. Also here is Sean Dunwoody, who is an artist and entrepreneur, also among other things. You guys are all like doctors. You have too many titles. Sean, nice to have you back here.
It's always great to be here.
And Mary Lupien is, among other things, an educator. She's a substitute teacher. She's with a group called Mothers Out Front, an environmental activist, and also a candidate as well. Mary, nice to see you.
Thanks,
as well.
Good to be here.
All right, let's just go around the table. Mary, I'll start with you. You heard the city's decision, so we'll start with the big news of the day before we dive into why you're all running. Parcel 5, the mayor wants to see RBTL get that theater there, and she says that's the best choice for that parcel and that piece of property. You agree or disagree?
I disagree. To say I'm disappointed would be an extreme understatement. I led a coalition of people that have been fighting for Visionary Square to keep that an open, green social center where we could really celebrate what makes Rochester so unique, our food, our music, our culture, and bring the two segregated Rochesters and have a place for them to interact and be together. This proposal completely envelops the entire parcel. And, you know, at least with the Galena proposal, there was half green space and half owner-occupied condominiums, and this takes up the whole property, and it's more high-income market-rate apartments, which I believe we are saturated with.
Okay, so you don't feel it's accessible for everybody?
It's definitely not accessible for anyone. If you've ever been to Jiva Theater, how many black people do you see go there? I don't believe that this is something that can be used by the entirety of Rochester.
Okay, Sean Dunwoody, what do you think?
What do I think? I didn't actually get a chance to review those RFPs or see their numbers, but I do agree with Mary about let's have a connecting point throughout the city where everyone can be engaged. I do agree with that. With this statement of the with the Art Center, I hope that there is discussion of bringing community members in, artists as well, performers, theater artists as well, to figure out how does this structure actually fit within the scheme of Rochester. I think there needs to be a comprehensive cultural plan if this is the next move. What we need to think about is how do we create a green space, a gathering area? How do we create an arts and cultural center hub? But how do we also splinter that out through the city so that we have a functioning flow to make it move? I don't think that one parcel has that much strength to tip our city. I think it needs all connecting parts and pieces to make it happen.
Was there any single proposal? Mary mentioned Visionary Square, that this is not a park proposal that she liked. Was there one that stood out to you?
Actually, there were two that stood out. Of course, Visionary Square was a great move, and I agreed with that. I actually sat down with some of the earlier people, Ken and Ben. Mm-hmm. And to that, with Visionary Square, I also brought the question of we're thinking about gathering people, but we're not thinking about a population. We're not thinking about African-Americans and young people who gather downtown. So that was one of the issues I would bring to that table with Visionary Square. Where are the others? As we mentioned, the Jazz Fest and everything else, where are young people who will actually be there during the day and afternoon hanging out? What services or support can we give to them? And Galena's proposal was an interesting mix of space and use. Once again, who does this during the day? Who's really going to be using this space? Mm-hmm. Are we creating a space that we feel is just for a particular type of people, or can we create a space? Is everyone at the table to create a space, an area where all are included? That means children, young adults, people of all races and backgrounds and ethnicities.
Okay. Willie Joe Lightfoot, what did you think of the mayor's announcement today?
I said kudos to the mayor. I said I think this is absolutely amazing. And I'm going back to the days of the Renaissance Square. See, I'm a little older and I got a little more experience in things that are supposed to be working downtown and didn't end up get derailed and never happened. happen. So for Rochester, should be very excited about. I think it's 776 jobs. I think it's 166 full-time positions that may be provided to people, construction jobs and jobs that be provided to local people in our community. That's absolutely astonishing and amazing to be bringing those types of jobs to the city of Rochester. It's a big hole there. Nothing was there. Something needed to be done. We knew it was three proposals. I think people said that there were three pretty good, decent proposals on the table. We got one. And we got Tom Golisano's name on it. Oh, my God. That's amazing.
See, I was going to be bored if you all agreed all hour. This is good. It's a good start.
Amazing.
and Willie Joe, you brought up Renaissance Square.
Yeah, I remember that well.
I don't want to bring up this next term, which is such a pejorative, mm-hmm. to say, to kind of slur RBTL at all.
Right.
I'm only going to bring up the Fast Ferry as an example of something that's a big ticket project that a lot of people, and frankly, let's be honest, a lot of media kind of got on board without being overly scrutinizing.
Right.
And Arnie Rothschild from RBTL is going to be on this program on Tuesday. We're going to talk about the numbers because we have to, if we're going to do this.
Yes.
They're going to have to own it, and it's going to have to be sustained.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
You cannot go back to the taxpayers every year and say, whoop, we're $10 million short.
Which
whoop,
we see that.
Are you worried about that?
Well, of course, being on the Monroe County Legislature, we look at, Frontier Field. Mm-hmm. As an example that we brought up in the legislature almost every year on our budget when we do that $1 billion
budget.
And
it wasn't supposed to be that way.
It was not supposed to be that way. So these are the things, of course, if I'm on city council, that I will be looking at doing, being fiscally responsible, looking at this and making sure that it's sustainable.
Okay. So let's start with why you're running. You served 10 years on the Monroe County Legislature.
Yep.
Your family's had a big name in public service locally. You were term limited out of the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
And why city council now for you?
This is what I do. This is what I'm born, raised to do. I eat politics and community service for breakfast. If you knew my father and you know my family, you know that to be the truth. So I'll do this regardless of what happens in this election. I'm retiring this year from the Rochester Fire Department. I needed something to do other than cut hair. And I do it anyway. People coming in and out of my barbershop every day asking for services, asking for different things. And constituent services is where I think I shine most in doing public service. And so I want to bring an element and bridge the gap, if you will. I think there's a major gap between the young people, 18 to 25, and those that would be considered our seniors in politics. And I want to bridge that gap. I'll be 45 in July, and I want to see more young people getting involved in this stuff.
Now, when people come in to get their haircut with you,
yes.
and they're talking to you because they know you,
mm-hmm.
what are they talking about their biggest concerns or needs right now in the city?
I say this when we're out. And first of all, I want to commend Sean and Mary. I think the 16 people that are out here are amazing candidates, and I think the city should be excited about having such a diverse group of people. Mm-hmm. The number one thing that I've been saying on the campaign trail here, I kid you not, this is the biggest issue that I get when people say, people come, they ask us for our vote. We give it to them, and we never see them again. We don't see them in Walmart. We don't see them in Denny's. We don't see them on our street. We never see them again.
Until they run for re-election, right?
Yes. And so, with me, my thing is I'm accessible. I'm approachable. And people see me all the time. I'm doing free haircuts all year round. I'm doing different events that I do all year round that people see me doing, whether I'm elected or not. And I think that's the biggest concern that people have in the community, Evan, is that, they're tired of their vote being taken for granted.
And so your priority number one, if you're
constituent
elected. Constituent services.
24, you call me, you get me in 24 hours. You need me, you get me in 48 hours. I put my word on that.
Okay, so that's number one. Sean Dunwoody is running for city council. And you ever run for any office before?
No, I haven't ever run for any office
before. So tell me about the decision-making process to get involved.
The decision-making process to get involved actually is my life. My platform is my life, is how I actually approach things in this world. And that's via community connections, entrepreneurship, and creative capital. So all my days are spent engaging with communities, all four quadrants, working with young people, working with communities to find better solutions to what the problems or issues they may be having in their neighborhoods. So I thought, there's only so much one person can do in small neighborhoods. I mean, you can move a lot, but I want to bring that skill set, that design thinking. I want to bring that to city council and be able to support those neighborhoods on a larger scale with policy and procedure. and still be connected. I'm still going to be out there working with young people on my hands and knees, running around the ground with kindergartners and to scaling off of buildings, painting walls. I'll still be accessible and I'll still be connected. I want to be, as Willie said, we're here for the city of Rochester, and I want to maintain that spirit and bring it to city council.
Now, priority one for you would be what, Sean?
Priority one for me is actually connecting with neighbors and connected communities and building a strong cultural focus of Rochester. I think we have a very strong arts and cultural community, so I really want to bring strength to that. I think there's ways that we can use that through education, beautifying our neighborhoods, and actually connecting individuals through every quadrant of our city. So a strong cultural focus for Rochester.
And you've probably heard, Sean, whether it's here or on other places around the community, your own work has given you a lot of background on how to do that, hasn't it?
That is correct. That is correct. It's as far as you asked me about political background, I don't have much of that, but I have a great deal of connecting with community. So that's sitting down, listening to their concerns, their issues, their hopes, their dreams, crafting a plan, creating a budget, and moving forward, implementing that plan so that everyone involved and at that table has a sense of success, and it continues from there out.
All right, Mary Lupien is running for office for, well, how many times have you run for office before?
Well, I mean, technically, I guess I've run for a delegate position in the last presidential primary, so.
And that was it, though?
And a Democratic committee seat.
Okay,
which,
there you go.
Yeah.
So you got a little bit of experience.
A little office running, yeah, but this is my first, you know, major run for a political office.
Okay, and why did you decide to do it?
Why did I decide to do it? So I've spent the last 10 years or more working in the community. I've, similar to Sean, I've made my life my service. I've made my life my activism. Every choice that I make from where I decided to live and raise my family, where I send my kids to school and the job that I have is all with the goal of implementing justice. I worked at St. Peter's Soup Kitchen for off and on about 2.5 years. Really listening to people who are struggling in the community. And what I find over and over again is that it comes down to policy. There's only so much you can do on your own until you have to go to the government. And I want to be that person on the other side of the microphone that I'm used to speaking on, asking for city council to do what we want them to do. I want to be the decision maker. And why I really running for office, I'm outraged. I'm outraged that we are number one in childhood poverty, that we only graduate less than half of our youth, and that our Democratic Party is split in half. I am independent, and not many people may know this, but our Democratic Party is split into two factions, and they're at war with each other. And I will not join a camp, and I don't want to, because I want to make decisions that the people tell me to make and not, which one side or the other.
And Mary, if you're elected, priority one for you would be what on city council?
Improving and expanding our transportation options, including public transportation, creative ride sharing, van pooling, making our city more walkable and bikeable. Because trying to figure out how to get from here to there is central to every one of our daily lives. And some of us have an easier answer to that than others. Some of us can just get in our car and go to work. Others have to get up at 5 a.m. and have a neighbor watch our kids and send them off to school and get home late at night. We don't get to, help our kids with our homework or participate at school. We can't even get to a job that's accessible to us. So it really is central to so many of the issues that I care about.
All right. Now, Mary is talking about splits in the Democratic Party. And Mr. Lightfoot, I think, has enough experience in local politics to evaluate that statement. The Democratic Party split into two factions, and she says they're at war with one another. Do you agree with that?
Yes.
It's hard to argue that right now.
It's not really an argument. When you have yeah. people discussing the fact of whether the mayor is going to get, a sitting mayor is going to get the Democratic designation of the party, hello? Like, are we having that conversation? Like, we shouldn't yeah. even be having that conversation. That's unprecedented. You know, we've never even seen such a thing. Or when you've seen a mayor election as what we've seen before and the Democratic designated mayor person gets also challenged again by the same party with an underlying campaign that ran after the primary, what we saw happening there was unprecedented. We've never seen some of these things before. So, yeah, that's a little troubling, being a staunch Democrat. I've been a Democrat all my life. So, you know, I've never changed parties, or I didn't just get into the party, and I don't look to change parties. But I do believe at the end of the day, though, I'm the glass half full kind of guy, and I believe that this type of mayor is the type of person that's willing to sit down and work those issues out. I think that people just have to get rid of their egos and have to be willing to say, you know what, the city and the people, they're the ones that suffer from us fighting or infighting. But if you look at national politics, Democratic political politics, the same thing happened on a national level. You had an infighting there, and then the two individuals, the Latino fella and the African-American guy, got together and they worked it out.
Tom Perez and Keith Ellison.
I didn't want to mess their names up.
I understand the point. But that's exactly what happened. You're saying once they decided on a party chair, they settled it, they shook hands.
All politics are local. So if we look at what's happening locally, we can see what happened nationally. I think there's an example there that we can draw upon to see the glass half full, and we can actually get to a place that is beneficial for everyone.
Well, I want to follow up on this and ask all three candidates on the subject, because just this morning, since the announcement about Parcel 5, I was getting text messages from different members of council who you would probably say are in different quote-unquote factions of the party,
yes,
and the responses are very different.
Right.
Some are shocked and angry. Some are saying thumbs up here. And you're seeing, even in city council, you're seeing a divide. Can city council heal and come together?
I think, well, you got to remember, I spent 10 years in the Monroe County Legislature, where it was 15-14 when I first came on, Republican Democrats, and then it's 19-10 now. Mm-hmm. So I understand infighting will be coming between, but at the end of the day, our values, our core values, I think as Democrats, will surface and will take over our personal feelings about certain things. And if it's about jobs, it's about putting people to work, it's about getting Rochester on the right track, I think at the end of the day, those are core values for Democrats.
Sean Dunwoody, are you worried about splits in the local Democratic Party?
Yes, I am worried about that. I can see the two tides. But I think this, as Willie said, I think that actually suffers. That hurts our city as a whole. And that's why I'm glad there's so many people running for council. It's a fantastic thing, because if we can work together, our mission is to support this city and make it the best it can actually be. Our divides are not helping to build a thing. And as you said, let's put aside our egos. If we have to create jobs in the city of Rochester, let's find a path and avenue to do that. Cross the table and shake hands and agree to disagree at some point in time. If we have to stimulate educational services, let's do this because our children are suffering. We have to reach across the table and say, let's agree on this or agree to disagree. These are the things that are hurting our city, and personality and politics should not be in play. It should really be about, let's focus in on what is going to affect the city of Rochester and our future generations. We have to now look, our egos and ideas will only last a certain amount of time. So we have to instill the right vision and focus in our young people so that 25, 50 years from now, Rochester is the city of promise that it's always been.
Mary, when you hear, you know, Willie say, you know, he's referring to 2013, the election there, his concerns with how the Democratic Party didn't unite behind one candidate, but thinks that we can get past that. You know, you say you're an independent. You know, do you blame any side of this? Do you think one side is more to blame than the other in the party? Is there a way forward that you can see if you're on council?
That's a really good question. And I don't necessarily want or do blame anyone. I think both parties, both factions of our party are to blame in one way or the other. And the divide existed before the last mayor, the 2013 mayoral race. It was made deeper by what happened, and I don't necessarily agree with, you know, not rallying behind the designated candidate, because that's what they, you know, I'm newer to the party. You know, I've been a member for a year and a half, and a committee member for, you know, a little bit less than that. And, you know, that's kind of the mantra that they say, the designated candidate, that's who you're supposed to support. And that they didn't do that, you know, it does kind of go against what they say that they're about. And you start to wonder why that is. And, you know, the factions that exist are very largely along racial lines. And so you really got to start to ask the questions of, you know, why? And I'm not saying I have an answer for that, but you really do got to think about it. Can it be healed? I sure hope so. We agree on 98% of the issues. You know, it's really comes down to hurt feelings and real questions as to motivations. But we can heal. And I do believe part of that answer is electing more independent people to council. Because right now, you know, the mayor's race, who you pick for mayor has deep implications as to what they represent. It goes on it goes beyond what their vision for Rochester is, and it goes to what they represent and what that choice means to the people in our city. So this mayor's race is going to be very interesting.
All right, I'm going to get to your phone calls in a moment. Listeners, if you're just joining us, I want to remind you that there are a dozen or more candidates for city council.
There's 123, actually.
There's a lot of new faces to politics, and then there are some veterans. So we're going to be talking over the next month. Once a week, we're going to be meeting and sitting down with candidates for Rochester City Council to get their views. So Willie Joe Lightfoot, Mary Loopy, and Sean Dunwoody are here in our round one with Rochester City Council candidates. And if you want to call the program, it's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994. In our second half hour, we're going to be talking more about poverty, transportation, and housing, some of the things that have already come up a little bit. We're going to dive into that. Obviously, it all ties together to economic development and jobs, and we'll discuss more of that, but we'll also discuss what you want to talk about, and I'm going to start with Bonnie in Rochester. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Yes, hi. What are the major roles of city council is to balance off the system by, you know, representing individual citizens and individually and collectively. So I have two questions for you with that in mind. One is, could each of the candidates indicate to me whether they supported the effort to use corporate welfare for development downtown in regard, mainly with regard to residential apartments and lofts and such. So that's one question. Second question is, I would like to ask each candidate, would they be willing to use public transportation in order to carry out their duties of their job on a daily basis?
Bonnie, thank you. Let's start. All right, we'll go around the table. Willie Joe Lightfoot, I'll start with you. She described it as corporate welfare, which is essentially tax breaks, et cetera, for developers. In particular, she's looking at lofts, things like that.
Yeah.
Is that a positive or a negative?
I think it's a negative. I think it's something that we really have to, I would really want to look at as a council person, because I own a small business. I developed a small business on Jefferson Avenue, 4,200 square foot mixed use structure. And I only can charge $1 per square foot for my property. But you go to Park Ave, you go downtown area, that price goes up immediately. I got no tax breaks. I got nothing. I had to do, you know, I got some loan to grant money, excuse me. But I, you know, that came with all of these different things that I had to do as a business person. So, of course, yes, I want to look at seeing that being that disparity kind of fixed, if you will. So I think that has to be looked at. Yes.
Okay. Sean Dunwoody, how do you feel about it?
I agree with Willie. I wholeheartedly believe this needs to be looked at, because there are unevenly yoked areas of the city of Rochester. And if we have neighborhoods that are suffering because they can't get that tax support or that tax break to even rebuild or reshape their homes, we're going to keep tipping into the high poverty level. We're going to keep tipping with lost jobs. So I would really like to look at, as a city council person, I would really like to look at those numbers and see, can we not give so many tax breaks to developers, and can we give some tax breaks to particular areas? Let's target it. Let's try it first. Let's see if that actually works in a particular area. We take one of our neighborhoods that we feel is really in distress, and let's see if it can have a tipping point, if we can give these incentives and breaks to neighborhood residents.
Okay, Mary Loopian.
Yeah, definitely not in favor of corporate welfare. There are several members of council that I've spoken to currently that agree that we've gone too far, or at least that the time for tax breaks is over. You know, downtown is coming back. It's not the ghost town that it used to be. And I really hope this Parcel 5 project doesn't follow along those lines as well. Yeah, other neighborhoods in Rochester, people are struggling to stay in their homes. Small business owners, you know, small businesses are the backbone of a diverse and healthy economy, and we're not helping them out very much. You know, my husband is a small business owner. At the end of the street, the landlord, she owns a number of storefronts and has apartments above. She cannot get any help, and she's there because she cares about our neighborhood, and there's no help for her. So my neighborhood is Beechwood and Parcells. My neighborhood desperately needs revitalization. And I would, you know, similar to Sean, I want to see the numbers. How many jobs are these high-income towers downtown, how many jobs do they really create? How much tax revenue are they really bringing in? I want to see those numbers.
And Mary, Bonnie also wanted to know, would you take public transportation as part of your work?
I
think that ties into just the kind of transportation we do use and what you would emphasize.
Yeah. So I am a public transportation user. I have been for years. When I work in places that is makes it able for me to take transportation, like when I live on Parcells, the bus stops right across from my street or from my house. And when I worked on Brown Street, it was so easy for me to take the bus. You just go through the transit center and there you are. Now I'm a substitute teacher and I'm bouncing all around the city and I have to be there at 7 a.m. I do take my car, and city council will be kind of similar to that. So I want, and I also want to mention that I ride my bike quite a bit. And the kind of combo of bike and bus makes public transportation a little bit more accessible if you can do that and you don't have kids to cart around. But that's part of why I want to focus on this, is because I should be able to take public transportation to do my job. And everyone should be able to have accessible transportation options so they don't have to be forced into a car. You know, especially, you know, with the world that we're being given, relying on personal vehicle transport is going to go away. And we have to be forward thinking to design a city that where we don't have to have a car.
Okay. Sean Dunwoody, taking transportation, public transportation.
I don't have a problem with that at all. I agree with that. I ride my bike as well. I also take private transportation, which is my feet walking throughout the city, because there's no better way to enjoy the city of Rochester. Public transportation, I think, is a value that needs to really be looked at as far as our city. As you mentioned, Mary, It's about creative thinking. It's about creating a culture that supports public transportation, supports walking and biking. So that requires a citywide sort of cultural comprehensive plan to say, hey, this is how we're going to flow and function. These are some of the businesses. These are some of the stops that we would like to have, so that people feel comfortable and free to take public transportation. There is a certain stigma if you're taking public transportation in this city, and it's been built over years, and I think it's going to take some time to remove that. But public transportation is a powerful force. Just even talking about the downtown bus terminal. Beautiful facility, but going in and catching a bus, I realized it's just basically made to move me in and move me out. That facility could do so much more as far as educating our community about health issues, a micro mini market. If we're talking about ways in which people are using public transportation, let's get fresh fruits and vegetables in that public transit center. We can actually do a lot more with our public transportation as a vehicle to educate communities and riders. As you know, the rails, which I've worked on these programs years ago with young people dealing with sexual health and teen pregnancy, we use the rails as advertising because we realize that these young people were riding the public transportation. And we were able to reduce, back in 2007, we were able to reduce the HIV rates of young people between the ages of 13 and 24 with this campaign and using buses in particular to get this point across. So public transportation has the power to move people, and it has the power to move ideas. And I think it's a very valuable tool.
Evan, can I have 5 more seconds?
Sure. Go
revise.
Ahead. That's all right. Willie Joe knows he'll have this time. So.
As you were talking, it dawned on me that, yes, I absolutely commit to taking public transportation when on city council, because what better way to find out from the people what they need in transportation? So, my first answer was, wow, that's going to be difficult. I don't know. But now I'm going to say yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Willie Joe Lightfoot, what do you think?
I agree with everything they said. And put a barbershop down there, too.
So let me follow up with you, Willie, and just ask you, if you're on council, do you want to see actual policy changes, though, that would, you know, push, for example, RTS to make any changes? Or, and I know these are complex, and they're, you know, there's a lot of things to line up here, but should there be changes that that you can see that would allow people more access to get to work, more stops, something that is specific that you'd support?
I think the ride sharing thing is awesome. However, me being a barber, and you know, I created a program called the Professional Barber and Counseling Association, which we're coming together trying to bring benefits for barbers and counseling. Well, why am I saying that? I'm saying that because the taxi drivers and people are having an issue right now. Uber, people are talking about, and these are all transportation things. However, I'm for people having the options and things for that nature. However, I think that there should be, they should be treated the same as the taxi drivers mm-hmm. and stuff are now. That's my only problem with it. Because mm-hmm. if somebody opened up a barbershop across the street from me and they don't have to have any licensing, they don't have to do the same stuff that I did, that's not right. That's wrong. So I'm for it as long as it's across the board, everyone's being treated fairly. That's my own. I'm big on fairness.
All right, so
and people being treated fair.
In other words, if across the street from you, if there's a mom who cuts her kid's hair, that's one thing. But if all of a sudden, if she's cutting 10 haircuts a day, getting paid for it.
With no license.
With no license out of
I
her
got
house.
A problem
you think
with
that's
that.
Business-wise unfair to you?
Absolutely.
In the same way that you would look at Uber and Lyft and say that's unfair to the industry.
Especially if you're requiring one person to do something, but the other person doesn't have to do it as counsel, that's not right. Good policy. So, being a council person here in Rochester, I would want to make sure that we're doing business fairly across the board for all of our businesses. And most of all, when you talk about these businesses and transportation, and it is a business, and I want to go back a little bit to what Mary was said about our small businesses. Most of us don't have really small businesses. We have micro businesses because we don't fit the real definition of small business. That could be you could make millions of dollars, hire so many people, have so many employees. Most of our mom and pop shops are micro businesses. And I want to bring that topic, that word up, because they talk about small business, but we don't fit that profile. And I think we got to change language in city council and start talking about micro businesses.
And what can be done specifically for them, Willie?
Well, one of the first things we need to do is get rid of ATF, get rid of selling our third-party taxes away to third parties. The county does it, the Tower and Propel, and the city does it to ATF, American Tax Funding. They're charging 50 cents on the dollar. People are losing their homes and they're losing their businesses as a result of that. We need to go back to recouping our own taxes and giving people more of a plan to pay their taxes. And I think that'll keep more businesses here and keep more people in their homes.
All right. We're going to ask Sean and Mary not only what they think about that, but we're going to talk with all of the candidates about poverty and about community relations, about the state of race in Rochester, and a lot more. And we'll get more of your phone calls. So we're talking to three of the candidates for Rochester City Council in the first of our series of at least four programs with the candidates. Sean Dunwoody, Mary Lupien, and Willie Joe Lightfoot are here this hour, and we'll come right back after our only break on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, we preview the upcoming One Take Film Festival, series of documentaries, not the least of which is a film called Unrest. It premiered at Sundance. It's coming to Rochester. We're going to talk to the director and the subject of the film, a woman who has chronic fatigue syndrome who documented her own heartbreaking story in an effort to help convince the world her condition is real. That's just part of next hour. Hope you join us on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Want to get to your phone calls, and this is Joel in Rochester. Go ahead, Joel.
Hey, I want to say that for anybody who's not sure, and let me preface this by saying I don't have any stake in any of this. I'm not working for any of these candidates, but for anyone who's not sure about who they plan to vote for, you know, I think that, I don't know Willie, but at least with regards to Sean and Mary, my impression is that they've been totally responsive to any questions that I've asked them over the last several weeks since they announced their candidacy. So I really appreciate that, because it's been my impression over the last number of years that we have a number of city council people and other elected officials who are non-responsive to phone calls, emails, and petitions, and oftentimes actually have never seen carry out any action that I've been pushing, whether it's with regards to animals, historic preservation, economic development, the built environment, or any number of other issues. So I really appreciate that Sean and Mary at least have been responsive, and here's a shout out for them, and you've got my vote.
Thanks, Joel.
Thank you, Joel.
And to be fair to Willie, he said he didn't know Willie, but Willie said priority one is being responsive.
Well, that's my number. And also, as far as animal, I put together the animal abuse registry for Monroe County. So, you know, he's never reached out to me. If he'd reached out to me, I'm sure we would have had a lot in common.
Eve writes to the program to say, Evan, some great ideas from your guest today. Thanks for this. I love the idea of a grocery store at the bus station. That's what Sean and Dunwoody had that idea. She says public transport is such an important part of quality of life, and a fast train to New York City would be great too, by the way, says Eve. I want to get John in Rochester, who is not happy about the sanctuary city discussion. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Evan. Yeah, I'm a taxpayer in the city, and unless I misinterpreted what I read in the newspapers, I am outraged about the policy of the city becoming sort of a sanctuary city, promoting lawlessness of federal law and embracing illegal immigrants. I think it's an outrage that this lawlessness is promoted, if that's the case, unless I read the newspaper articles wrong. I'd like to get your comments on that.
Okay.
Whether that can be reversed.
John, thanks for the phone call. If you're sort of new to the sanctuary city debate, it's a conversation that both cities and counties have been having across the country about how to handle it when someone who is undocumented is either arrested, or if immigration and police, federal officials, if they're asking for help with that. Sanctuary cities, Rochester drafted language that essentially makes Rochester a sanctuary city without, according to their lawyers, breaking federal law. So if Donald Trump is threatening, or his administration is threatening, Jeff Sessions to cut funding for cities that are sanctuary cities, Rochester believes they are within the law while still saying they're not going to go above and beyond to put people who are undocumented at risk of being deported or picked up. So they're trying to kind of draw that fine line there. John's not happy with any of what Rochester has done. Willie Joe Lightfoot on the sanctuary city debate. Have you been watching that? What do you think?
I've been watching some of this. Being on the fire department, you know, I respond to a lot of calls that are dealing with people who are from other countries and things of that nature. And they have a lot of needs. And a lot of people come to not just Rochester, but to New York State because we offer so many benefits to them, you know, being on the county legislature, social service and different things of that nature. So if I'm not mistaken, we already had this sanctuary city title, if you will, prior to this administration.
That's true.
Yeah. So I want to say that this is nothing new. I think that this administration just continued to do some things that Rochester was already doing.
But is it a problem? John thinks it's a problem.
I think that it's, you know, policing people who are not following the law, that has to continue to happen. But should we be protecting our citizens, all of our citizens? I agree with that we should be trying to protect our citizens and get them to where they need to be in our society, not, you know, looking for reasons to. And I guess I got an issue because I'm an African-American and I live in the Jefferson Avenue area. You know, profiling is a big thing. So anytime you start talking about, like, these people are the ones committing crimes and they're the ones doing all this, I got issues with that because you can't prove that. There's no data that can support that these immigrants are the ones that are killing folks or that are doing drugs or selling drugs or doing some of the ill things in our neighborhood that's going on. So I guess I get a little defensive when people start, you know, kind of talking like that because, you know, that sounds like profiling to me.
Okay. Mary Lupien.
Yeah, well, actually, Willie, there is data. There's data that shows the exact opposite. More people are killed by getting run over by a lawnmower than terrorist acts committed by refugees. I support the sanctuary city, and I understand where John is coming from, and it's a position of fear and maybe some ignorance. John maybe not has known someone in this situation. My daughter's father is Guatemalan, and he's here on a work visa. Not together anymore, but we go visit the family every year in Guatemala. And I have people coming up to me. One of his neighbors just had a baby. This man does not want to leave his baby, but he's asking me, how can I come to the United States? And my answer is, there's no way you can come legally. There just isn't. From other countries, unless you are lucky enough to get picked to a guest worker program or you have a lot of money, you don't get to come here legally. So what do you do when your family's struggling and you can't feed them? And by the way, a lot of this has to do with our own policies in America that have broken down the economies of other countries. What do? You make the choice to put your own life at risk, to come here and send what little money you earn back to your family. And I absolutely support protecting those people.
Okay. And Sean Dunwoody, what do you think?
I agree. Excellent points, Mary. I wholeheartedly agree with that. Sanctuary city, protecting our people, of our city. They are our future. Let's protect. I don't agree with protecting somebody who's breaking the law or anything like that. But let's support our citizens who are trying to find a better way of life, a better way of living. And I'm sorry that caller feels that particular way. But it would be fantastic if we went almost a statewide sanctuary state, which can actually help and support a lot of things. I've realized that looking at sanctuary and workers who are coming here, that affects our statewide economy. You being a wine wine guy, that there's a lot of people who are actually out there getting those grapes who may not necessarily be citizens. So that actually affects our economy and tourism for the whole state. So we have to look at what that impact of a sanctuary state or city actually means as far as growth for our city.
I'm going to read an email from a listener named Teresa, and I'm going to start with Willie on this because Willie had the most praise for the city's decision announced this morning to go with RBTL and the Performing Arts Center for Parcel 5. Sean and Mary were not happy with that decision. And here's Teresa. Now, granted, to be fair here, I mean, I'm not polling the community. This is just one email, one person. There's probably a lot of people very happy about this decision. There's plenty of people who probably wouldn't be happy. I take that point. But Teresa writes, she's concerned that the mayor, quote, just sold out our downtown to the highest bidder. We need a people's parcel for all the people, not just those who can afford it. We need a city that celebrates all of its citizens, regardless of class. Now, Willie, what I want to follow up with you on that is this point here. We've talked about gentrification on this program. We've talked about the desire for every neighborhood in Rochester to grow and get stronger, but also protect the people who've been there for a long time and be inclusive, as opposed to just available to people who have more money, et cetera, et cetera. How do you view this kind of comment about whether it's Parcel 5 or all parts of the city growing while still being accessible for all of the citizens?
I agree with that. Great question that she emailed in. I'm one of the ones who are probably in one of the most poorest neighborhoods in our country per concentrated poverty, 14608 and 11. And I will say this. The reality of it is, listeners, there are two Rochesters. Mm-hmm. And that's just the reality. There are places where that are what I call they have all these pockets of activity, you know, that's going on in them, and it's more containment that we're seeing going on. Yeah. And certain areas are being contained as the area. As long as it doesn't spill out into other areas, it's okay. So I think I don't know anyone that's ever. I do 300 people a week in my shop. I haven't met, and I've been here my entire life, and I'll be 45 years old. I have not met one person outside, excuse me, my lawyer actually lives downtown, a lawyer friend of mine, in the Saginaw building on East Avenue. But other than that, I have never had a person tell me that they want to move, especially a person of color or someone, that they were moving downtown. So I think there's this big misconception that, oh, we're doing this gentrification. There are not a lot of minority people living downtown now. Anyway, from my understanding, and you have to look at whose data are you talking about. So is there gentrification going on downtown? Is that another Cornhill? I don't see that. I don't hear that. And I'm down here, you know, on the fire department in these buildings, and I don't see that going on. So I don't know if that's the case. I would be on city council. What one thing I would do is try to work with to make sure that we try to have some fair opportunities for people who want to live down there to live down there. But again, for me, looking at my lenses from my shop, my building, my community, there's two Rochester. So if you're going to attack this issue of disparity, gentrification, you got to look at the entire cities like Clinton Avenue, Jefferson Avenue, not just downtown. It's happening all over our entire city. Mm-hmm. I work at University Avenue, truck 4 on University Avenue, and it's 10 minutes from my barbershop. But it's a total different situation. Yep. Then Jefferson Avenue and Park Avenue are two different, but I pay $10,000 a year in commercial taxes for my property. Mm-hmm. But I only charge $1 per square foot. That's the real conversation when you want to talk about gentrification.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Sean, go ahead.
Oh, okay. You go ahead, Mary.
All right. Go ahead. No, I was going to say there actually are plenty of people of color living downtown. Andrews Terrace, Simon's Terrace. You know, they're just, it's like even two downtowns, right? We've got towers of terrible quality of living and towers of market rate, but I don't know whose market we're in, because I've heard people coming from Chicago that say that apartments cost more than there. You know, so what kind of a downtown do we want? Do we want one that's inclusive to everyone, or do we want one that 3/4 of Rochester can't afford to be in?
Sean, just a comment on the message that came in. I think, personally, I'll say it's not so much about Parcel 5. It's not saying that I'm not happy about a performing arts center. It's just the fact of how many people are we actually going to bring to the table. Let's bring more individuals to the table. And it goes back to what Mary said and what Willie said earlier. It's about we need to create, this is where creative capital comes into play. We need a cultural plan for our city. I think we're not looking at how do we knock down these walls in these two different Rochesters? Like I'm in 14621 in Le Crescent. And that's Boar's neighborhood in all of Rochester. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't stop me from actually bringing arts and culture and making things happen. Mm-hmm. So going back to even when you mentioned the Arts and Cultural Center, we have to really look at, is it going to be a cultural connector or will it be a cultural divide? And the way you actually try to do that is you bring the communities together and actually open that up. I've had the privilege of actually doing that, being a founding board member of MUC, which is Multi-Use Cultural Community Center, where we stated in our meeting when we wanted to create this theater that everyone needs to be invited and has access to this theater. And now it's we're booked out 2 years out from whether they be Caucasian theater troops, the Aquaba players, or whether it be the Latino Theater or the Sankofa Festival. This is a theater hub for the people.
Because you created a cultural plan for it.
That's correct. The plan was
And the entire city can have that kind of a cultural plan?
Yes, it can.
Okay.
I believe it can. It will take some time. You have to bring partners together. We have to really figure out how this works, but you can create a cultural plan so that you have flow. That cultural plan will affect your transportation. It will affect your walkability. It will even affect the businesses that want to take place or the individuals who want to come to this city and the students who want to stay after graduation.
All right, before we lose the hour, let me start with Sean, go around the table then. Because poverty has come up a number of times, but let me just ask you this. If you're elected to city council, the Rochester Monroe Anti-Poverty Initiative is already underway. City council is just one part in a lot of different cogs in a machine trying to work together on this. Mm-hmm. What do you see as one thing that you can do, you can bring to council that will help with poverty, Sean?
Is once again, going back to design thinking. Let's look at this. Let's take a different approach to this. I mean, some of our old models may work or may need some tweaking. Let's take a different approach at how we can actually tackle poverty. With poverty, being a person who has lived in poverty, there are a lot of different factors that you have to look at. I understand that we want to create work, but there's a whole work ethic that needs to be created. There's a whole idea of self-identification that needs to be nurtured to understand who you are in the schema of all things. So there needs to be a strong cultural connection to addressing poverty. And for each particular area, I think that's very important. If we look at what's actually happening culturally, we can't apply what happens on, I'm just going to name neighborhoods, we can't apply what happens on South Avenue to Clinton Avenue. There's a cultural difference. There's different perspectives. There's different viewpoints. And I agree, I believe with the Anti-Poverty Initiative, let's take a creative, or not creative, but a designed approach to it. Let's really look at it as a design, as almost a marketing or advertising tool. How do we actually move people toward a better life?
Okay, Mary Lupien, on poverty.
I think I bring the focus on relationships and the understanding that strong communities build strong neighborhoods and help lift up individuals as well as the entire community together. The relationships that I built with my neighbors, you know, if my neighbor needs to go somewhere, we watch her kids. If she needs a ride, I'll give her a ride. We take care of each other. And focusing on things that bring the community together, like community schools, where we understand that when parents and children know each other, they can start to form a support system and a web to help each other out of poverty, because the government's not going to do everything for us. Our neighborhoods have been split. People don't know each other. Neighbors don't know each other. So, you know, when you see someone that's not supposed to be in the house next door, you don't know, you know. So we really need to bring that community focus back to council, and I can do that.
Okay. Willie Joe Lightfoot.
I agree, Evan, and thank you for the time and this opportunity. I agree with a lot of what was already said by my colleagues here, and I was also add that when you're addressing this poverty issue, I think it's three phases. It's education, it's treatment, and it's training. The education pieces, we have a lot of tools. Being in the county legislature, there's so many tools and resources that we have available to the residents and the people in this community. A lot of them can't navigate through all of the ways of getting involved and giving what they need. So that's an educational piece that we have to highlight and educate, and starting especially with our young people, because the poverty, you have to start from the beginning on down. I think we've been trying to address it from the top, but I think we have to start from the bottom and to stop the cycle of poverty. And then treatment, there's a lot I cut here at the Rochester Psychiatric Center, and there's a lot of people there who, we have a lot of mental health issues that are gone untreated in our community, and we say we put people to work, put people back to work. Well, if they're not able to work, then they can't go back to work. And I think we got to address that maybe a large percentage of these people who are in poverty may need some type of treatment and assistance. And then there's training. And I think we're looking at, you know, we see colleges and we see jobs, but we have to start training and getting our people ready, work ready.
All right, so these are three of the candidates for Rochester City Council. Woo-hoo. Willie Joe Lightfoot, are you online? Where can people find more about you?
I'm on Twitter, but you can click me at www.willielightfoot.com.
All right, Mary Lupien, where to find you?
MaryLupien.com. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, you name it.
All right, Sean Dunwoody.
SeanDunwoody.com on Instagram, Twitter, all those things, and you might see me on the street somewhere and say, what's up?
Sean, Mary, Willie, thank you for being here. Really appreciate all of your time. Candidates for Rochester City Council, this is the first in our series of interviews with a dozen candidates this year. All right, short break. More connections next.